Radio Prague News.
The leader of the Social Democrats says it's premature to talk about the party's candidate for next year's presidential election. Prices could go up by 30% in just 1 year under a finance ministry plan to raise VAT on cigarettes. And the rock group Kabat will represent the Czech Republic at the Eurovision Song Contest. The leader of the Social Democrats, Jiří Paroubek, said on Saturday that it was premature to talk about who the party's candidate would be in next year's presidential election. He said the Social Democrats would discuss criteria first and names later. Mladá Fronta Dnes reported on Friday that the Social Democrats could nominate former Prime Minister Vladimír Špidla, ex-education minister Petra Buzková, or the former Supreme State Attorney Maria Benešová. The incumbent Václav Klaus says he plans to seek re-election. Less than 2 weeks after a rise in value-added tax on cigarettes and tobacco products, the finance ministry is already planning another VAT increase, Bravo reported. If the ministry's proposals are accepted, the new price rise could come into effect at the start of 2008. This would represent a record 30% rise in cigarette prices in just 1 year. The rock group Kabat will represent the Czech Republic at the Eurovision Song Contest in Helsinki in May. The band won Czech television's Euro Song Competition to find the country's first ever Eurovision representative. Kabat formed in 1983, but have become big stars only in recent years. Their latest CD, Corrida, was the biggest-selling album in the Czech Republic last year, despite not being released until December. The only female referee in the Czech men's first division will not be allowed to officiate in the second half of the season, which has just got underway after the winter break. Dagmar Damková has been removed from the list of top-flight referees after missing a fitness test due to illness. Ms. Damková said she would now concentrate on reaching the Women's World Cup, which takes place in China in September. The weather, there should be more sunny spells over the next few days, and temperatures are set to reach up to 17 degrees Celsius in the early part of the week. My name is Ian Willoughby. You'll find more stories at radio.cz. But for now, that's the end of the news.
Tune to the International Service of Czech Radio, and my name is Dita Siedu. Coming up next, our monthly listeners' competition and some reaction to your comments and questions. Pavla Horáková has written you a letter from Prague, and we round up the program with Czech Books, in which David Vaughan looks at Tom Stoppard's play Rock and Roll. We start with Mailbox with Pavla Horáková.
Hello and welcome to Mailbox. Thank you again for all your emails and letters that never cease arriving. And we'll start off with an email from our regular listener Bob Boundy from New Zealand, who is, after a period of experiencing bad reception, praising the clear signal of Radio Prague.
Hi there from New Zealand. First of all, reception today was perfect. I was completely gobsmacked and nearly fell off my stool in complete shock. For many weeks, reception has been zilch. Also, another point of interest is that the New Zealand government is looking at the Škoda motor car for its fleet, as it's environmentally friendly, so who knows, they just might buy them.
Recently we broadcast a report on Prague taxi drivers fighting with the City Hall over prices. Catherine Kraina from Australia, who's been to Prague on several occasions, wrote this.
Prague taxi fares are indeed extortionate. The distance from my office in central Melbourne to my home is roughly the same as the distance from Wenceslas Square to Kunratice, where I sometimes stay when in Prague. In Melbourne, where the cost of living is higher, it costs me $20 to get home. In Prague, drivers have tried to charge the equivalent of up to $100. As for the sharks at the airport and the stations, they ask for silly money. They get very aggressive when you politely point out that they are trying to rip you off. No wonder tourists complain bitterly.
In last week's Arts, Jan Wellinger looked at the new Czech television drama about the ill-fated mission of Czech paratroopers during World War II. Don Schumann from the United States has sent us this question.
I read the article about the two-part series on Operation Silver to be broadcast on Czech television. Do you know if it'll be available on DVD and where one may be able to purchase a copy? I extensively read several works on this and many aspects of Czech history. My greatest interests lie in World War II, as well as events surrounding the Prague Spring, and I'm always searching for more. Please let me know anything that may be useful.
Czech television releases many of its productions on DVD, and it would perhaps be best to keep an eye on their website www.czech-tv.cz, which has an e-shop section, or contact them directly to ask if it eventually becomes available. One crucial thing to remember is to ask whether the DVDs released have universal coding, so they can be played on DVD players in North America. And staying with film, Henry Lerzer from the United States has this question.
I recently viewed an excellent Czech-British film about Czech pilots in the RAF during World War II. It appeared to be vintage 1980s or 90s or so. Note, it's not Dark Blue World.
I'm afraid we have not been able to identify the film, but if you could provide a little more detail, we might succeed. Or maybe other listeners may be able to help. Let us know if you recognize that film, please. And finally, Aloysie Krásný from Australia is responding to this week's report on anti-smoking legislation in the Czech Republic.
I refer to your article on the smoking laws, or should I say non-smoking laws, in the Czech Republic. Smoking in the workplace has not been allowed in the UK or Australia for as long as I can remember, and you will find that this is the same in many European countries. Smoking should not be allowed in restaurants and definitely not in a working environment, and I am appalled to think that this is allowed. If people are stupid enough to want to smoke, then they need to go outside the workplace and smoke. Companies and governments need to stop, think and act.
Thanks a lot for all those letters. And now it's time to repeat our competition question for March. I'm impressed by the number of answers that have arrived since last Sunday when I first announced the question, which is as follows. This month we want you to tell us the name of a British film actor who was born in Prague in 1917 but moved to Britain in 1939. He's perhaps best known for his appearances in the famous Pink Panther movies with Peter Sellers. Your answers should reach us by the end of the month at english@radio.cz or Radio Prague 12099 Prague, the Czech Republic. Thank you very much for your feedback and please keep those letters coming. Pořád si počítá, kolik je mu roku, drátyňočku traťatý, podrnatý čapatý, drátyňočku traťatý.
Keep those letters coming and good luck with the next competition question. But Pavla isn't leaving just yet. This time, instead of reading out a letter that you've sent to her, she's got one that she's written for you.
Over a week ago, an international jury announced in Prague the winner of a tender for the project of the Czech National Library's new building. The jury decided unanimously that the project will be realized by the Czech-born, London-based architect Jan Kaplický. The new library is expected to welcome the first readers in 2011, and the costs are estimated at over 2 billion crowns. I'm not going to write about the futuristic outer form of the building, a multicolored jellyfish of a structure. My imagination was caught by the practical details about the services and equipment available inside. The library is going to house around 10 million books, which will be available to readers within 5 minutes of ordering them. There will be 2,000 places in the reading rooms, the whole building will be covered by wireless internet signal, not to mention a few cafes where one will be able to leaf through the latest papers and magazines. These details reminded me of my university days and my painful experiences in the National Library, in the historic building of the Clementinum, close to Charles Bridge. I'm sure a lot has changed there since I graduated, but the mere idea of receiving your textbook within 5 minutes of ordering it just makes me very jealous. In my time, the Clementinum's so-called Hall of Services was a huge space with rows and rows of ancient card index boxes. In them you could find thousands of file cards, the size of a postcard, in different states of disintegration. To be fair, some were only a few decades old, but there were a lot of those whose colour had turned to yellowish-brown after they'd been touched by thousands of fingers. Most were typewritten, but many also filled out in 19th-century calligraphic handwriting. When I found my desired book in the box, I copied the numbers and details onto a form, which I then slipped into a sort of a letterbox. I was to come back hours or even days later to pick up my book. At that point, I was often told that it had been lent to someone else or that I used the wrong card index box and chose a copy which cannot be taken away. After several failed attempts like that, I just gave up on the National Library altogether. Don't get me wrong, the old Clementinum has its charm. A former Jesuit college, it has a number of beautiful historic reading rooms, corridors which echo your footsteps, and every 15 minutes the chiming of a tower clock resounds through the courtyards. I can just see the Baroque complex breathing a huge sigh of relief once it's freed from the weights of old paper. But the good thing is that even after the new building opens, Clementinum will live on as a library. The idea is to keep only a few specialized collections there and open the site more to visitors and tourists. I must admit, the upcoming changes at the National Library just make me want to be a student again. By the way, the ancient index cards have been scanned and are available in digital form on the National Library's website, www.nkp.cz.
And that letter from Prague was written and read by Pavla Horáková. This is Radio Prague, and David Vaughan's here, and he's got a fresh edition of Czech books for you.
The Czech premiere of Tom Stoppard's recent play Rock and Roll was one of the big literary and social events of the year, attended not just by the playwright himself, but also by many prominent former Czech dissidents, including Václav Havel. The level of interest was not just because Tom Stoppard is of Czech origin, born in Zlín in 1937, but also because of the very Czech subject matter of the play. In the autumn of 1976, the arrest of seven members of the underground rock band The Plastic People of the Universe was the catalyst for events that were eventually to change Czechoslovakia forever. The immediate consequence was Charter 77, when 240 people signed an appeal for the regime to respect its commitments to human rights and freedoms. The clampdown on the Plastics, with their loud rock, rebelliously long hair and defiant lyrics, took on a quality little short of farce, and finally destroyed any illusion that at least some of the reforms of the 60s had survived the Soviet-led invasion of August 1968. Tom Stoppard's play covers a period from just before the invasion to 1990, and tells the story of a number of people's lives in Czechoslovakia and in Britain, as they are touched in various ways by the fate of the Plastic People. When I saw the highly acclaimed London production last summer, I was very impressed by the way the playwright had managed to convey the complexities of the so-called normalisation period to an English-speaking audience. At the same time, I couldn't help wondering whether the play would survive being exported back to a Czech context. Well, the Czech director, Ivan Raimond, has tried just that, and the play was premiered in Prague last month, in a translation by Jitka Sloupová. As the first reviews were appearing in the Czech papers, I spoke to her about the play and its Czech production.
In in the play, Plastic People of the Universe are, I think, the symbol, the extreme symbol of artistic freedom, which was, of course, suppressed during the communist regime. And all the characters are defined by their relationship to this very strong symbol of artistic freedom.
And if you could tell maybe a little bit of the story of the play.
The two main characters of the play are Professor Marx, who is a Marxist living in England from Cambridge, and his pupil, Jan, who lives after they meet in 1968 in Cambridge. He lives in Czechoslovakia and is, in fact, not at all Marxist. So these two perspectives intertwine and make the play very interesting, as the approaches of these two characters contrast.
Yes, I mean, it's very interesting, isn't it? Because Max, the British university professor, is a Marxist. He's, I suppose, what you'd call an unreconstructed Marxist, and he refuses, for example, after the 1968 invasion of Czechoslovakia, he refuses to condemn it, he refuses to leave the party, and that way he becomes very isolated in Britain. It also makes Max a very difficult character, I should imagine, for Czech audiences to engage with, because in the production in London, he came across as a very sympathetic figure. But I think for a Czech audience, it would be far harder to accept Max for all his highly controversial political views.
Yes, I think it is harder, maybe. Luckily, the actor who plays Max plays not his views, but his character, which is quite charming. Some of the best lines by Tom Stoppard are given to this character, and he is very witty, he is very warm as a person, and so on. And of course, he has some history himself, his personal history, which is very evident in the play.
And it's very interesting, I think, the character of Jan, who tries to be unpolitical, doesn't he? He goes back to Czechoslovakia even after the Soviet invasion of the country, and he tries to see the best in the future. And I think there's a very good little dialogue between him and his far more political friend, Ferdinand, where Jan is still, despite the invasion, is still being optimistic about the future, and Ferdinand really has no illusions. Here is the little extract. Jan, this is Jan speaking. I'm trying to tell you, for once this country has found the best in itself. We've been done over by big, powerful nations for hundreds of years, but this time we refused our destiny. And then Ferdinand comes in much more cynically. It's not destiny, you moron. It's the neighbours worrying about their slaves revolting if we get away with it. And gradually Jan loses his illusions, doesn't he? And that's, I think, one of the central themes in the play is that in a totalitarian regime, you can't be unpolitical.
Yes, definitely. And as I was 15 in 1968, but I still remember this enthusiasm, and which hasn't declined after the occupation. It went on and on. Normal people were still slightly optimistic. It's very well put in the play that it was until April 69 when Dubček was forced to resign.
And then the thing that's so fascinating in the play is, of course, that the whole thing falls apart when these musicians, the Plastic People, suddenly find themselves getting in trouble with the authorities.
Yes, Jan, who is not a musician himself but a fan of this group, gets more and more into trouble, and he loses his not only profession but several jobs which he was able to find, and he even gets into jail. He's sentenced, and then he's working in a factory. He can't move because he wouldn't get any other job, you know.
And in the meantime, back in Cambridge, Max is sticking to his Marxist principles, isn't he? And his wife, Eleanor, who's also another very strong character in the play, she's dying of cancer. And I think there's a very powerful scene where she confronts the fact that her body is falling apart, but her mind is still intact, with his dialectical materialism, with his idea that there is nothing more than the body. And in the end, Eleanor loses her temper, and here she says, "They've cut, cauterized, and zapped away my breasts, my ovaries, my womb, half my bowel, and a nutmeg out of my brain, and I am undiminished. I'm exactly who I've always been. And then here it's in italics. I am not my body. My body is nothing without me. That's the truth of it. It's a very dramatic moment, isn't it, where Max's Marxism is confronted with real life in his family life, just as in parallel we see Marxism in theory confronted with real Marxism in Central Europe, in Czechoslovakia.
Yes, you were right. It's a very strong moment in the end of the first half of the play, both these climaxes. I really love this scene, and I think it's one of the Stoppard's most moving scenes he's written in years.
And I have a feeling that one of the strengths of the play is that it shows to an English-speaking audience very powerfully how in a totalitarian society you can't assume that the authorities will leave you alone if you just remain quiet. Sooner or later you become compromised. Mm-hmm. That's something that Czechs, I think, are very familiar with. So to what extent can that message be translated to a Czech audience in the Czech version of the play?
Well, I think very well, because it reflects the Czech literature, the dissident literature, and I think even the official literature had such themes. So I think when seeing this, one realizes that there is, of course, also a way not to get into trouble, but it's sort of a death of your social life, of your inner life even. For instance, there is a scene which takes part in Prague, and it's Jan, the Czech hero, meeting a British journalist, and the journalist is looking for a story, and Jan reacts, "There are no stories in Czechoslovakia. We have an arrangement with ourselves not to disturb the appearances. We aim for inertia." I think that everybody still remembers this state of soul. So I think that's also what works in Stoppard's rock and roll here in Prague.
But aren't there certain moments where the dialogue between Czechs is slightly unconvincing or slightly stilted from a Czech's point of view?
It's, I think, also the task of a translator to make it more colloquial, to make it more familiar. I have never cut anything or I have never changed anything, but simply in putting certain words in these lines can make these moments acceptable and even funny.
The play has just been premiered here in Prague. The production has had mixed reviews, with some critics being very enthusiastic about it, others saying that this doesn't translate to a Czech context. How do you feel about the criticism of the Czech production?
We are not much used to dealing these themes on stage. So the state of Czech playwriting is quite different from what Tom Stoppard brings on stage.
Yes, it's interesting, isn't it? The fact that there has been very little in the way of Czech drama written about that period, which is in itself very dramatic.
Yes, Tom Stoppard's play is an example of someone writing something from a distance and perhaps seeing things more in order, while people who lived here are too much involved emotionally, perhaps, or they know much more facts. And I think it could be like that they still can't sort out what was important. On the other hand, even the style of Czech playwriting is very different from Tom Stoppard's, as Tom Stoppard is a very original writer.
The play ends just after the fall of communism in 1990, and one of the elements of the play that's been most heavily criticised by some critics is the way it ends. It has a romantic resolution between Esme and her teenage sweetheart, as it were, Jan. It also has an almost kitsch ending with the Rolling Stones playing in their famous concert in 1990 in Prague. It isn't an entirely satisfactory ending, is it?
Well, I must say I also had some objections to it. And as Tom himself says, it's theatre, it's not life, and it has its rules. Something must have an ending on the theatre. It's not possible to finish it in the middle of a story. It must have its ending. I think it works much better on the stage than when you just read it. And I think that it really is a happy ending.
Jitka Sloupová, thank you very much indeed for talking to me about Tom Stoppard's play Rock and Roll, which recently had its first performance in Czech here in Prague. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's the end of Czech Books and the end of this Radio Prague English language program. We'll be back with some current affairs and a new edition of One-on-One tomorrow. For more information, visit our website at www.radio.cz/English, where you can also review our older programs in both text and sound, and you can download them as a podcast. I'm Dita Asiru. Thanks for joining us. Goodbye and take care.